Welcome to the 11th episode of Season 5 of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Tuesday the 31st of July, 2012, and in this episode we're going to talk about the O'Reilly Open Source Convention and interview Jonathan Nadow about the Accessible Computing Foundation. We will, of course, cover the latest news, events, bit about Ubuntu, tomorrow's technology today, go over your feedback, and recap our current competition. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Stunt Laura, Andy Piper, and with me this week are the very real Tony Whitmore.
Hello.
The Stunt Alan, Alan Bell.
Hello.
And the sometimes real Mark Johnson.
Hello. Sometimes surreal as well.
Yes.
Let's be fair to Alan. Alan is an Alan in his own right.
I am.
He's a Stunt Alan, but also an actual Alan.
Yes. I'm merely an imposter here.
I'm an Alan in reality. A place I like to visit sometimes.
Right, okay, so we have a full house, albeit with some different faces. It's nice to see you guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank
nice
you for
to be
stepping
here.
Into the various shoes and boots. Mark, what have you been doing since the last episode?
I've been playing with my new toy.
Which is?
It's a Nexus 7.
What's that?
It's a 7-inch tablet from Google/Asus.
Wow. Is that it in your hand?
It is it in my hand.
That is an impressive...
Like the way he's impressive. He's using it as kind of his prompt. He's sitting here. For those of you in out there in podcast radio land, Mark is sat here with, you know, the rest of us have laptops and show notes and things in front of us, but Mark just has his very nice little 7-inch tablet.
Exactly.
It's fondle slab.
Yes.
I'm fondling it gently.
Okay, that leaves your other hand free to drink tea.
Yes, that's right.
Excellent.
Good.
Alan.
Yes.
Pretending that you're... Alan,
yes.
What have you done since the last episode?
Well, I'm going to pretend that I'm this Alan. So I've been having fun. I went to the Olympics opening ceremony.
Oh, really?
You were actually there?
Well, kind of. I was there on the Wednesday before everyone else.
You got the preview, and then you weren't allowed to tell anyone what you'd seen.
I had to save the secret. Yes, it was a big save the secret hashtag.
Very good.
If you could have told one secret from the show, which would it have been? If I said to you, go on, you let one out.
Let one secret out?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I have to think about that because there was so much in it. There was helicopters and queens jumping out of them, but they didn't actually jump. The queen didn't jump out on the Wednesday.
Oh.
She saved that for the Friday.
Well, she's knocking on a bit now, isn't she?
Popping overhead. That was all jolly good fun.
Excellent. Andy?
Yes, I've had a very Ubuntu-y kind of a couple of weeks, actually.
Cool.
Since the last show that I was here, I've done lots of other things as well. But I went to the O'Reilly Open Source Convention, which we'll talk about in a bit. I went to the first UK OpenStack user group, which was hosted by Canonical.
Uh-huh.
And our very own UPC former host, Davey, was there.
Oh, really?
He actually did the overview presentation of OpenStack, which was very cool.
Cool.
What else? I've got a Raspberry Pi now. Hurrah, finally.
Oh,
one of the last people
in the world.
No, that's not true. But I have got one, and it didn't come in. I built a Lego case out of a kit that I got, which is very cool. Of actual Lego. That was actually designed by a scout, I think, a 12-year-old scout or something. It's a cool web blog post about it on the Raspberry Pi blog, and now they sell them from a particular retailer or online retailer.
Cool.
It's not that easy to put the case together, but it's really, really cool that it's in a little red Lego case with a Raspberry on top. And I went to the very, very nice Ubuntu UK barbecue with you, Tony, in fact.
Yes.
At my house.
Which is at Alan's house, where we did things with his chickens. Trying to balance them on John Faulkley's head.
Yes.
That was good fun.
Yeah, it didn't go quite so well with John. But
and Alan Pope got quite frustrated trying to fix various laptops. I seem to remember.
Yeah.
There were laptops in bits. It was quite an interesting event because this was an event that was advertised with the Google Plus event management service thing.
Yes.
Which
you managed to invite.
They had some teething problems with that because when I post things on Google Plus, I generally post them to circles and extended circles. And I thought that that was the done thing with events as well. And it sort of invited... all of Silicon Valley to my back garden.
Right.
But to be fair, Linus didn't turn up,
no.
Yeah, they wouldn't quite...
Sent his apologies.
They wouldn't quite have fitted, I don't think. Not all of Silicon Valley. I mean, you've got a big garden, but still.
Yeah, well, it was good fun.
It was very good fun.
Very nice, thank you very much.
For having the motley, assorted Ubuntu UK people around. And I came away with just as much food as I turned up with, so It was a good deal for me. But yes, so I did that, and I also had a nice weekend in London with a couple of old school friends of mine. I shouldn't call them old school friends. Friends of mine from school who are the same age as me. I went to see the Reduced Shakespeare Company show, which is on in London for the next few weeks. So go and see that. It's all about sports, but you don't need to know about sports to get the jokes. It's very funny.
Is it also about Shakespeare?
This one, no. Oh. Their first show was about Shakespeare, and now they've done other things. So the first show, they do the complete works of Shakespeare in 96 minutes or something like that. And they've done other things about the history of America, all the great books, Hollywood, all the great films, all that sort of stuff. And this one is about all the sports. Basically, it's three idiots trying to tell you about every single sport in history ever in 2 hours.
Right.
So, yeah, that's the concept. But we did want to remind you of our competition we've got going on at the moment, which is to win an EcoPC. We reviewed it back in episode 6 of this season. So go and listen to that for the review. It's an EcoPC N1A with a 300 gig hard disk, 2 gig of RAM, and a 1.6 gig Atom CPU. The question we have set is, what does the evot.biz website say the power consumption of the N1A is? Send your entries to competition@ubuntu-uk.org. By Monday the 13th of August, and we'll announce the winner in our next episode. And make sure you tell us what you'll do with it as well if you win it, the ever-present question on that one. You can also get details of all the vouchers that we had last time. On our last episode. We are not going to read them again. Thank you very much.
Oh, come on. The codes are so good. They're really, really memorable as well. If I read one out now, then people will just be immediately remembering them tomorrow morning when they go to the website.
Or switching off and not listening to the rest of the show.
Yes. So you've got about 2 weeks to use those up, but they're discounts for various values and upgrades and things. So go back and listen to the last episode to hear what they were. Right. I think we've covered all the administrative here. Should we get on with the show?
Let's do that.
Let's go do on it. Then.
Andy.
Hiya. Oh, sorry.
That was spooky.
Sorry. That was quite disturbing. You went to OSCON.
The word. I went to OSCON.
What happened at OSCON?
So for people who don't know what OSCON is, I was really excited because I've been in kind of open source communities pretty much since OSCON started back in 1999. So OSCON is the O'Reilly Open Source Convention. So O'Reilly are the people that publish the books with the animals on the cover, and they're kind of, you know, very often very good reference works for open source kind of
And they're sponsoring stuff. The Geeknik at OggCamp.
They sponsor later. All kinds of cool stuff, and they've sponsored lots of things at OggCamp's past as well. So they're very lovely people. So anyway, it's a big convention. It was in Portland in Oregon. It ran for a week, and lots of cool stuff happened. So what happened is, I think a few years ago, some guy called Jono, don't know exactly who he is, but he started
Bono Jakin, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. And he started some community he started some community leadership summit, which runs the Saturday and the Sunday before the convention.
Yes.
And unfortunately, I was traveling at the time, so I missed that. Some of my colleagues went, and that was meant to be very good. So it was an unconference around how you do community leadership and how you can kind of get people more involved in different communities. But, you know, the overall event is 5 days of different tracks. There's a big expo hall with lots of vendors. So I was actually there in my professional capacity to man one of the stands in the expo hall to talk about clouds.
Cool.
But I also did some birds of a feather and went to some talks and things.
Cool. Okay. So you were there talking about Cloud Foundry, is that right?
I was, yes. So that my job now, having moved on from my previous employer, is developer advocate for Cloud Foundry, which is an open source platform as a service. There are other platforms as a service available, which we might mention in a moment.
What's a platform as a service?
Okay, so platform as a service. So think about clouds. We often divide them up into layers. And so we often talk about infrastructure as a service.
Nimbus, that sort of thing?
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. So and they've all got kind of funky things to do with, you know, clouds, so silver things and, you know, nebulas and stuff. Anyway, no, infrastructure as a service is kind of like, if you like, the hardware. If you're going to buy a computer and you just get a bit of electronics, which has probably got some disks and some CPU and stuff. So that's what we call infrastructure as a service. And it's typically used, you refer to things like Amazon EC2 as an infrastructure.
Right.
Because what it lets you do is have a container, and then you go and put an operating system in it. Mm-hmm. So the next layer up is kind of platform as a service, where you actually imagine you've got a computer with an operating system on it, and then now you can write apps.
Right.
Or you don't need to set all the stuff up to write the apps. You don't need your Apache web server and or your Nginx or your Java runtime, whatever. You've just got all that there for you in the cloud. So that's what the platform is. So the platform as a service lets you just write apps and deploy them. And then the next layer up typically is software as a service. So something like Gmail or Google Docs or Salesforce.com, where you've got a web app that you're using. So that's what I mean. That's what we mean by platform. So actually, we were there talking about that, and there were other companies talking about platforms and infrastructure. So there was the people from the OpenStack project that had a whole day devoted to OpenStack, which is an open source infrastructure as a service, and which kind of competes with Amazon, but it's open, so we like it and it's cool. Also, Red Hat have got a new project called OpenShift, which is kind of similar to Cloud Foundry, but runs on kind of exclusively on Red Hat as virtualization. So,
okay, cool. So was the cloud a big part of OSCON then?
It was really big. And I think part of it was because HP were one of the sponsors, and HP are talking about their cloud, which is actually based on OpenStack, which is very nice.
Oh, right.
And it's just a hot topic at the moment. Hot topic, sorry. I think that was, people are getting to the point where lots of open source software is suitably consumable, and you just want to start building new cool stuff in the cloud. So from your mobile devices, Mark might want to access some cool thing from his lovely new Fondle Slab, which is just running in the cloud. So we want to help do that. So, and also from an Ubuntu perspective or a Canonical perspective, they were talking about some very, very cool stuff. So George Castro and Mark Mims did a great talk about something called Juju, which is part of the Canonical portfolio, which lets you really quickly set up kind of packaged applications, let's say WordPress, and you need MySQL Server and you need a load of other bits and pieces, and you want to do that in a nice big distributed way, so you can run a couple of commands called Juju charms and have all these things deployed. So that was really neat.
Cool. Yeah, I think we talked to George earlier this season.
Last time Alan was on the show, in fact.
I think you did.
Was it?
Indeed.
Oh, right. Okay.
It was nice to meet him, because I know he's a friend of the show, and I've heard him on the podcast before. So
George is a really good guy. That's just to get emails going, oh, you're so kiss-ass to Canonical. But no, he's a really nice guy, George.
We can't help it if they employ nice people.
Exactly.
Just, yeah.
Well, they don't always. But,
And the other...
yeah, that Alan Pope. Yeah.
Talking of... Let's just make sure that we don't give, Canonical all the love. One of the big sponsors of the event, in fact, the biggest sponsor of the event, was a little company called Microsoft, which was really interesting for an open source company.
I've heard of them, yeah.
Yeah, but it wasn't... Well, it was Microsoft, but Microsoft have actually set up, for those who don't know, a new spin-off called Microsoft Open Technologies Incorporated.
Yes.
So they had a huge, big presence. I don't think they had any talks, but they had a really big section in the expo hall with a big touchscreen computer with Windows 8 and lots of cool stuff. But they do actually have now...
Some nice open technologies demoed there.
That's right. But they do actually have now, via their Coplex website, the ability to host open source projects, and they had a bunch of developers who had written. There's a guy who's written a package manager for Windows and various other things, and they're contributing to some big open source projects now. So
you can apt-get update your Windows.
Kind of. I can't remember the name of the command, but it's something like that.
Oh, yeah. It's okay. I'm not. But,
I'm sure they'd be happy to help you get it on there, Alan. So anyway, yeah.
And Mark Shuttleworth was there as well, wasn't he?
I think he was. Yeah, no, he was. He did the closing keynote. He was one of the, so each morning, Tuesday through Thursday, they had three or four keynote speakers.
Right.
So kind of the big names and the ones, I mean, they were all excellent. They were all really, really good speakers. I mean, the overall conference schedule was just superb. But the kind of the big speakers, we had Tim O'Reilly, who was talking a lot about economics of open source and sharing and companies putting their stuff out in the open and giving back to the community. We had a friend of the show, Simon Phipps, talking about the fact that the OSI, which he's now the president of, has now got the ability to join as an individual member.
Yes.
So
go
and join as an individual member, everybody. I have. It's awesome. We like them.
What do you get?
You get a T-shirt.
You get an email address.
I got a T-shirt. I'm not wearing it tonight. Ooh. But I'm wearing another T-shirt, just to be
you
clear.
You are, yes.
Simon is going to be at Og Camp again.
Oh, very
and,
good.
I think he might be... helping people join there as well.
Very good.
assisting them filling in the form.
And this other chap called Mark Shuttleworth did a big... He did a great talk, Mark did. He actually had a really limited amount of time to talk about lots of cool stuff that Canonical are doing.
Mm-hmm.
He was pretty honest about the initial reception of Unity in the community, which was quite interesting.
Okay.
But also how it's now evolved and all the cool stuff you can do with it. So that was good.
Right.
But he started off really by talking about clouds. All, by the way, all the videos are on YouTube, and I'll make sure they're linked from the show notes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he did a talk, I think it was called Magic from the Cloud or something along those lines. And he demoed, he used Juju, which is the charm thing for kind of server or cloud administration.
Mm.
He deployed an app called Subway, which is a kind of an in-the-cloud IRC client that runs in your web browser,
right,
to Amazon EC2 running Ubuntu. Had it running there and then said, oh my goodness, you know, a tornado is about to hit our data center or whatever. We need to plan for this. So he said, let's move these running instance of Subway across to another data center on the other coast of the US, for example. But that data center is not running Amazon EC2. It's running HP with an OpenStack infrastructure. So he used Juju to do that. So that was kind of the first moment in the talk where people kind of went, ooh, that's kind of cool.
So was the sessions carried across and everything? It was a seamless migration? Or was there
I'm not going to say that that was the case because I can't remember. I was so blown away by the general, you know, let's take from a running system and move it, the whole thing, to a clean system. I mean, there was nothing provisioned in the OpenStack. So I can't remember whether sessions went across, but certainly the infrastructure moved over and, you know, you could continue to do stuff.
It was all sort of, there was a big diagram with sort of springs sort of showing the various hosts in the infrastructure.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't just all running on one machine, it's running on...
That's right. Yeah, so it's the point of Juju is not, and I think again, this is what George talked or somebody talked about on the show before. But the point of Juju is that you're not deploying, you know, a small app on a small desktop PC. You're deploying a distributed set of components on a set of servers in the cloud.
Yeah.
So that was kind of
okay.
The other thing he then went on to show was kind of what they're doing on the desktop, and actually this was their big reveal of the week because they then subsequently blogged about cool new stuff coming in Ubuntu.
Yeah.
So earlier on in the demo, listeners go and watch the video on YouTube later, he'd popped a few things up in Unity and he'd gone to a website and this little telltale banner had appeared saying, do you want to integrate Gmail into your Ubuntu desktop? And I kind of at that time kind of thought, oh, that's interesting. I haven't seen that before. Mm. And he went on to show that they're now integrating web apps into the Ubuntu desktop, into Unity, which is really, really cool. So he went to, for example, Gmail and said, well, you know, we've got this web app Gmail, but we'd kind of like, you know, desktop indicators to appear when new mail arrives.
Mm. Yeah.
And we'd like them to actually appear in the indicator menu rather than, you know, on the browser tab, for example. And we might want to send an email using the HUD. So I remember I was deeply skeptical of the HUD concept when they first started talking about it, this idea of scooping up everything from all the application menus and just presenting it in a kind of searchable text box. And it just worked. You know, he said, right, let's create a new email, bring up the HUD, type, you know, send message, and it pops up an actual Gmail web browser. Mark didn't show this, but I was talking to a couple of Canonical employees afterwards, and they were kind of saying, well, it goes further than that. You can take, for example, Last.fm or, you know, a music app and have that integrated into the sound menu.
Yeah.
As another alternative player. So it looks really, really neat and smart. I think it's coming in 12.10.
Yeah, you can get a PPA for it on 12.04 as well.
That's right, yeah. So I know that they're very keen, obviously, that we should, everyone should try this out. So the idea is really having standalone web apps that having their own icon in the launcher.
Mm.
And
yeah, I mean, it's one thing to have apps that launch essentially a website, but something else to have the integration with menus and
notifications and everything.
And the HUD, I mean, that was really great. I mean, you can actually
impressive. Yeah.
What do I want to do? I want to send an email and I want my email client to be a Gmail web window.
Mm.
So I was very, very, very impressed with that.
And the other thing is you can, because basically the way it works is by user scripts, which is where you write a little bit of JavaScript, which runs when you go to a particular website. So if you've got a website which you'd like to integrate with Ubuntu, you can write your own user script for that website and use the Unity APIs, which is quite clever.
You could also adapt open source projects like
yes, of course.
WordPress.
Yes.
You know, that it could be built into WordPress.
Mm.
And so you go to your admin console of your WordPress
and have
that integrated.
Mm. Oh, okay. Useful.
Yeah.
So it was a good week. Was it a week?
It was a week. It was really great. I mean, it's one of those things I've aspired to go to for a long time. I'm very fortunate to be in a position now where I'm working for an organization that was able to send me. And
because it's not cheap.
It's not. But having said that, it's been going for, you know, 12 or 13 years, and they did, as they often do at these kind of conferences, a show of hands, who's been to everyone, who's been here more than five times, who's
stand
the first
up
time.
Who came the, yeah, from the furthest.
and stand it and all that kind of thing. And it seems to be a really, you know, healthy environment where people, you know, you've got a large number of people who've been the ones who've come every year, and we've also, yeah, got a large pool of people who are brand new to it. And, you know, it wasn't all, although it was on the west coast of the US, it wasn't all people from the US. So it was really good. I really enjoyed it. I feel very privileged to have been, and it was great fun to see what's happening in with lots of organizations. The other nice thing I'll just mention is in the expo hall, they don't just have big companies, mm-hmm, although they have a number of big companies and the sponsors. They also have, along the back wall this year, they had a lot of non-profits. So, for example, the OSI was one of those. Mm-hmm. But you had, organisations like Coding for America, Social Coding for Good, lots of other organisations like that, local groups, groups dedicated to getting kids or maybe getting more women into technology or whatever locally. So it was really interesting to see that mixture. So enjoyable. Cool.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you for that little roundup of OzCon. Are you going to blog about it at all or anything like that?
Do you know, I really must, and I will. In fact, that you forced my hand. I'll have to do it. I'm just so far behind with blogging, but yes, okay. I shall blog about it, Tony, yes.
Okay, by tomorrow, please. excellent. Well, thank you for that.
The news. So Microsoft have fixed an embarrassing label or a constant in some of their code relating to Linux virtualization, and this was spotted by Matthew Garrett, or fixed by Matthew Garrett, in fact. It contained the constant B16B00B5, which looks an awful lot like the phrase big boobs. As Matthew Garrett, yeah, well, it's a bit puerile, really. And as Matthew Garrett pointed out, this isn't really the sort of thing that we want in our code. And it's the real story here is the origin of it. It's come from Microsoft, and it's to support virtualization of Windows. And it's quite hard to fix because we think this constant is hard coded into Microsoft's Hyper-V cloud platform.
Ah.
and it probably has to match that to work.
Mm.
And it's puerile. It's not horrific.
There's probably a lot worse in the Linux source code itself.
Well, I'm sure there is. But it's fascinating that the source of this is some closed and proprietary code where this constant originates. And yeah. It's
not something that users would ever see, is it? It's hidden away in source code.
It's deep in the code.
Okay. So not good, but not the end of the world.
Yeah, and it's just an interesting process where the many eyes shining a light on this.
Yes, didn't shine it on till it was too late.
Gabe Newell of Valve has revealed that a factor in the decision to port Steam to Linux is the belief that Windows 8 will be a catastrophe for everyone in the PC space, describing the port as a hedging strategy. Meanwhile, Rich Gildrich of Valve will be demonstrating Left 4 Dead 2 on Linux during the OpenGL BOF at the SIGGRAPH conference in Los Angeles.
Okay. So somebody doesn't think Windows 8 is going to be very good.
Yeah.
Has anybody else said anything about Valve recently and Steam and stuff?
Of course.
Richard Stallman saying something about it being unethical or something?
I think he actually wrote that just before it was officially announced. When it was... You know, strong rumours on Pharonix.
Right.
So it's been around a while. But he doesn't say, the kind of thing which you'd expect, which is, oh, it's, you know, the end of the world. How could this possibly happen? He actually says, well, in a way it's good because it means that if people want to play games, they don't have to have all of the additional removal of their freedom that Windows would provide.
Mm.
They can run a GNU/Linux system. But then he says DRM bad, proprietary software bad. Etc.
He's consistent.
Yes.
That's what we expect. Google security engineer Tavis Ormandy posted to information in the full disclosure security mailing list regarding Ubisoft's Uplay DRM system on a potential security hole on the customer systems by way of a rootkit. His initial investigations suggest that the Uplay system could allow arbitrary code execution from the web. Ubisoft, or Ubisoft perhaps, responded to the claims by stating that Uplay never contained a rootkit, the flaw has been patched, and we have always been at war with Eurasia, or whatever it is.
But yeah, that's an interesting one. You know, because this is a DRM system similar to Steam that you have to register online to be able to play the games that you paid for, and it's a risk of exposing users to some fairly horrible security holes. Assuming that's all they are.
Yeah. Right.
UK retailer and worldwide retailer Tesco has come under fire from the online community over its insecure storage of users' passwords. Users reported on Twitter that when sending a lost password request, a Tesco employee would email their password back in plain text. Tesco responded to the reports by stating that they take security and data protection very seriously, prompting a series of blog posts outlining where they're going wrong with their security. So actually, this was a chap called Troy Hunt, who's actually an Australian researcher, who observed, I think, that he'd been emailed a Tesco online password in plain text. And I actually saw this happening in real time on Twitter. He tweeted to the Tesco customer care people, who, to be honest, are probably just, the people who are trying to make sure that, an old lady doesn't get too upset at the store or whatever. Oh, actually, be fair, an old lady probably isn't on Twitter. But anyway, if there's a customer care...
there's a big Silver Surfer community in Identica full of old ladies.
Right, yes, okay. Is that Fab one of them? No, sorry.
You said that.
I did, yes. It was quite interesting because they just responded and said, well, we follow the strictest security standards and the passwords are only in plain text when we paste them into the email, which isn't good enough because it means that anyone inside the retailer has potentially the ability to look at that. So he's also then gone through and discovered that they run on a really old back-level version of Microsoft IIS web server and various other things. And also the fact that this has been reported over a number of years now. It's just beginning to kind of get elevated up to some of the more mainstream, at least tech press, like Gizmodo. Gizmodo's mainstream tech press? There is actually a Tumble log, if people are interested in tracking these things, called plaintextoffenders.com, where people regularly post offending websites that keep these information in plain text.
Fair enough. Okay, and that's the end of the news.
And what's the event that everybody's talking about?
Is it OSCON?
Olympics.
Oh, yeah. Begins with an O.
It does begin with an O. It's the Oglympics.
But nobody else would like
it. I don't think that's actually allowed under low cog rules. This show may be taken off air. Oh.
Right, yes. So Og Camp is 2 and a little bit weeks away. Mm-hmm. The next show will be the Tuesday before Og Camp. It's happening in Liverpool on the 18th and 19th of August. So there's lots going on, and I'll just quickly run through it all so that you don't miss any of it.
Cool.
First of all, thank you to our sponsors, Liverpool John Moore University, who are hosting us, Bitemark, who have given us some money, Yar O'Reilly, who are sponsoring the Geeknik, and Canonical, who have given us some stuff for the raffle.
That's good to see those. Some of those names come back year after year, don't they? It's good to have them with us. Thank you.
In fact, I think all of those people have sponsored us before, except for LJMU.
In fact, LJMU did sponsor the last one in Liverpool.
Oh, well, there we go. Right, the tracks. I've mentioned before that there's going to be some scheduled tracks and some unscheduled tracks where you can come along and offer up your talks. On the scheduled track, we're going to have Ross Gardler of Open Directive, Alan O'Donoghue of Hack to the Future fame, Alex Martindale, who's going to be talking about the history of computer errors, Lindsay Anison from the Broadband for the Rural North project, Stephen Fry from the Telly and Stuff, and Simon Phipps from the Open Rights Group. He's going to be talking on behalf of on the scheduled track.
Okay.
As well as that, we've got the Open Hardware Jam, where there's going to be all sorts of workshops and talks and sessions about hardware hacking. We've got the exhibition, which is going to have stands from Liverpool Lug, Bristol Lug, Bitemark, Anonymous, O'Reilly. Free Software Foundation Europe, OpenSUSE, the Open Rights Group, and Hacker Public Radio.
Cool. Okay. That's all, fine. But tell us about the things that people really care about, the social aspects.
Of course, we know that geeks love to socialise.
Indeed.
We're going to have drinks on Friday night. So that's the Friday night before the event, if you're coming up early. Dan says there is a bar underneath the hotel.
Right, of course there is.
Called something like The Wave. So that's where we're probably going to... That's just a public bar. That's probably where we're going to be on the Friday night. We'll make sure that we get firm details on the website.
Are we going to warn them that there may be a sudden descent of geeks into
I believe they've been forewarned.
They should get some drinks in or something.
Yeah. Two miniatures this week.
Each lunchtime, we're going to be having a Geek Nick. That's the bit that's sponsored by O'Reilly. They're providing us with drinks and stuff.
Cool.
So that's just going to be... There's some grass outside the venue. We're all going to go outside there, weather permitting, and have a picnic and a chat and, I don't know, throw some frisbees and whatever you do at a picnic. And there's going to be a party on the Saturday night, which is probably going to be at the hotel in the bar.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Sounds excellent.
You've probably got the best speaker list of any unconference ever.
Yeah. Yes.
It's quite good, isn't it?
That's really good. And Mark's done a lot of the work on that. So kudos to you, Mark.
Thank you. And I know can't take all the credit.
No, but you know, you've done a lot of the work on the speakers. Andy Piper is going along. He's going to be there.
Will be on the crew with of course the legendary Les Pounder as our glorious leader.
Les Quarter Pounder as that's what he calls himself.
He used to be known as Quarter Pounder on the internet.
Well, I just call him the chief.
Okay. Let's call him sir. Mark and I are going as well. Laura and Alan. And I know this Alan isn't going, but there'll be lots of other people there as well. So it sounds like it's going to be a really
Alan
good
Bell
weekend.
Gets a year off after his sterling work with the videos last year.
Yes. So if you still haven't got your act together, there are some tickets available still, I believe. A handful.
I believe so. Yeah. Dwindling amounts.
Yes.
So get in there quick. And yes, find yourself some accommodation. I think the official hotel is probably gone by now, but it's still worth trying.
Yep.
Have a good time.
Check it out at ogcamp.org. Andy?
And yeah, so for events that it's too late to get involved in, unfortunately, but I just wanted to mention that next week is Young Rewired State 2012, which I'm involved in. I'm going to be mentoring a group of students actually in Guildford in Surrey. So Young Rewired State is a fantastic event that's been started by Emma Mulqueeney. And the goal every year is we get a bunch of students in centres around the UK to learn coding. So from ages about 8 to 18, quite kind of a challenging age range. We use open data and build kind of social good apps, and looking forward to it. And hopefully there'll be plenty of output online for you to follow next week on Twitter and follow on the website as well.
Cool. Cool. And that's all the events.
And welcome to Tomorrow's Technology Today. I'm Douglas Austin Cambridge. Good day to all our listeners, wherever you are around the British Empire, or indeed the Isle of Dogs, where one day they hope to build an Olympic park.
Good luck with that one.
That will be our delightful co-host, Miss Deirdre Morris-Oxford. Good day, Deirdre.
Good day, Douglas.
And today's topic is terribly exciting. Teleportation. That's the instantaneous mode of travel by means of molecular decomposition, transmission, and reassembly.
You're reading that from a card.
Yes, but this time I understand it. A tele, from the Greek meaning travel, and porte, from the French meaning, travel.
If you understood it, Douglas, you'd know that teleportation is impossible.
Not according to Nikola Tesla, Deirdre.
Tesla was a fruitcake, Douglas. Haven't you heard of the work of Professor Carl Heisenberg, the uncertainty principle?
I'm not sure.
Heisenberg's uncertainty principle states that it is impossible simultaneously to know the position and momentum of an atomic particle.
Surely all you need is a very, very small Hoover to suck them all up.
Give me strength. There are trillions of atomic particles in everyday objects that can't be plotted. You can't break them down and reassemble them. Haven't you heard of Schrödinger's cat, the Copenhagen interpretation?
Oh, Schrödinger, the Moggy murderer. Diabolical mechanism, cat locked in a box, poisoned. Yes, I wrote to the animal cruelty people about him. I don't see what a poisoned pussy has to do with teleportation, Deirdre. After all, If you want to send a cat somewhere, you send a boy round with it on a bicycle.
According to Schrödinger, the Copenhagen interpretation implies that the cat remains both alive and dead until the box is opened.
Nonsense, Deirdre. Just give the box a jolly good shake. You'll soon find out.
The box is impenetrable.
I'll say. Cats and Geiger counters and radioactive particles, indeed. What's wrong with keeping it in a wicker basket?
Never mind the box. It's a theoretical model.
Oh, it's a stuffed cat. I see. No, I don't. Why would you poison a stuffed cat?
Ugh.
You see, Deirdre, all this talk of stuffed cats, and now we've run out of time. That's all for tomorrow's technology today. Toodle-pip and God save the king.
We're joined now by Jonathan Naidoo from the Accessible Computing Foundation. Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Now, I understand the Accessible Computing Foundation is quite a new organization. So do you just want to start by telling us a bit about what you are and why you have just formed?
Oh, sure. Well, the Accessible Computing Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We just got our nonprofit status. And I'm a blind GNU Linux user, and I'm the executive director, and basically the foundation is dedicated to bridging the gap between accessibility and technology through free and open source software.
Cool. Okay. So what are your sort of main goals as a foundation?
Well, you guys are, I'm sure, are aware that this day and age, technology is moving at such a rapid rate, and as fast as technology is moving, accessibility is being left behind as fast as technology is moving. So the foundation is, the goal is to step in and, like I said, bridge that gap between accessibility and technology. So what we want to do is create accessible software, free open source software to work better on mobile phones or tablets or, working within the GNU Linux operating system and making that run better. Like I mentioned, I'm blind GNU Linux user. We're not focusing on just blind and low vision accessibility. We're trying to cover every accessible avenue that we need to look at. There's roughly 1 billion people in the world with some type of disability. So we want to go after people that are paraplegics, quadriplegics, hearing impaired, vision, low vision, learning disabilities, dyslexic. So we want to cover all of these avenues using accessible software to, again, bridge the gap between accessibility and technology.
So on the technology side, what sort of projects in particular do you want to the organization to be contributing towards? Is it focusing on the GNOME or desktop Linux or any particular mobile flavor?
There's some of the things we're looking at doing is kind of looking at some of the low-hanging fruit right now. There's quite a few accessibility bugs on Bugzilla pertaining to, the GNOME desktop, Orca, maybe Pigeon, whatever kind of low-hanging fruit there is right now. We're going to be taking some of the money that we raised from our fundraiser and paying some developers to start squashing some of the low-hanging fruit and, start moving on that front with the GNU Linux desktop and maybe getting Orca to work better within the XFCE desktop. As of XFCE 4.10, they made they're making strides for that desktop to become more accessible with Orca. KDE is also working on the Qt framework being accessible with Orca, so we'd like to move forward on, Orca great coming into those other desktops other than GNOME and giving, blind and low vision users more of a choice between desktops to use. And there's also the Simon project, which is part of KDE, that has a lot of voice recognition stuff that's going on right now, and it looks like they could use a little bit of help, too, getting some stuff off the ground. So we'll be focusing on things like that. And like I said, we're looking at some low-hanging fruit first just to be effective and show people that, we're motivated into doing what we're saying we're doing. And then you know, once we gain momentum, we can start tackling bigger projects.
So is the goal of the foundation then to actually start to contribute code to these projects, or is it to be an agitator to try and get other people involved, or are you looking to drive the different Linux distributions to include this stuff? I mean, how are you looking to engage with the community here?
I guess from every angle that we possibly can. I guess first and foremost, we're going to be advocates of accessibility with free and open source software, but we'll also be taking money and paying developers to fix some of these bugs because, excuse me, unfortunately, sometimes there might be bugs filed against, some programs, and unfortunately, some, like the maintainers of those programs, accessibility kind of gets swept under the rug sometimes, unfortunately, because to them, the software is running fine, even though the successful bug is filed against it. It works for them because they're not depending on this accessibility, which is, understandable, but at the same time, it'd be nice if they could, fix these bugs. But that's where we come in, and we'll pay a developer, a certain amount of money to squash certain bugs, and then that way these bugs will get fixed. And then we'll also try to help advocate and educate maybe some developers on programming with accessibility in mind, because really a lot of accessible stuff could be taken care of quite quickly if some developers were aware of accessibility practices when developing software, and a lot of things could probably be taken care of right away if they were aware of these things from the beginning when they started developing software.
So in terms of your plan for actually having people, paying people to work on these bugs, do you have people sort of lined up who are ready to go and just need the money, or are you going to be putting up bounties for certain fixes?
We have a couple people in mind, but we also would like to broaden the horizon for developers in accessibility, because right now, developers within accessibility of free and open source software kind of few and far between, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So we'd like to get more people, working on the Orca team right now. Jo Marie Diggs is the lead developer, and she really only has two or three other people really working with her within Orca. I put on a conference called the Northeast GNU Linux Fest, and she gave a talk, and she was explaining that they have a real bad, hit by the bus factor where, if something bad were to happen to someone within accessibility and GNOME and GNU Linux, it would not be a good thing because there really isn't that many people working on this stuff. So we'd really like to get in some other developers and start, paying for them to expand, Orca being worked on within, like I said, helping work within XFCE, KDE, things like that. So we're looking to pay currently, developers already within these projects, but we're also looking to branch out and find other people to help these projects along.
So tell us a bit more about this event you've got coming up.
Oh, sure. We got our 501c3 status recently, and so we are going to be having a fundraiser on August 25th, which is a Saturday. It'll start on noon Eastern Standard Time and go until midnight. Essentially, it's going to be a 12-hour podcast. We're going to be streaming it live on thenewradio.net, and we'll be using mobile for a voiceover IP, and we're using the linuxbasics.com mobile server. So we can have up to 30 people in one room at once. And we're going to have Jono Bacon on, which I'm sure you guys are acquainted with Jono. And we're going to have Zach, Stefano Zaccaroli, the Debian project leader. They'll be on at separate times, but they'll come in, and we're going to come in and have a discussion about accessibility, free software, the importance of accessibility using free and open source software. And like I said, there could be up to 30 people in the room. And those 30 people that might be in the room can, talk to Jono and talk to Zach, and even if they don't have necessarily accessibility questions, they can just ask, them stuff about Ubuntu or Debian or whatever else the topics that might come up. And like I said, we're going to be doing it for 12 hours straight. I'm hoping to get, a few other people on to give access to people to ask these guys questions. But the goal is to hopefully have 1,000 bronze level memberships. So if you become a member of the Accessible Computing Foundation, a bronze level membership is $2. And when you become a member at $2 a month, you will get your own freedommail.co email address at the benefit of being a member of the Accessible Computing Foundation. So when you pay at least $2 a month, you'll have a freedommail.co email address, and you'll be able to use that, you know, however you like. You'll be able to use IMAP or POP3. It has a webmail client. You can access it with your mobile phone through the web, or you can use an email client, however you wish. You'd have your own freedommail.co email address when you become a member at $2 a month, and you'd be supporting, you know, the Accessible Computing Foundation and accessibility and free software, and bringing, you know, accessible freedom to people around the world by being a member. So we're trying to do that fundraiser. I'd really like to be able to have 1,000 $2 members around this time of the fundraiser, and that would really help us get off the ground and, you know, start paying developers to move forward and, like I said, start squishing some of these bugs.
So
that will be going on August 25th.
So does this event have a subscription fee to take part in it, or is it just something to raise the profile of the foundation and get people to become members as a result?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
So the event doesn't cost anything, but it's just to bring awareness to the foundation and to encourage people to become members.
Okay, what if people want to pay to shut John O'Bacon up? Is that possible?
We are willing to take all donations for
a Okay. And just for our international listeners, you talked earlier about a 501c3 status. Could you just explain a little bit what that is?
Unfortunately, if you live out in the United States, it's not really going to do much for you. It's a tax-deductible status that we have here in the United States. So if you donate like $500 a year to a nonprofit organization, you can use that as a tax write-off for your when you file your taxes. But outside of the country, unfortunately, that isn't of much use to anybody.
You talked before about there being, I think, a billion people in the world with some sort of disability that means that they could benefit from accessibility software in whatever operating system they use. Why do you think that accessibility is such a poor state in Ubuntu and other free software operating systems?
Important things of the foundation is to be an advocate of accessibility. And unfortunately, even I myself, I wasn't born blind. I was in a car accident at the age of 14, which that's how I lost my sight. If you don't depend on accessibility, it's easy not to think about it. It's sort of an out of sight, out of mind thing. And it's not of anyone's fault. It's just, if you don't depend on it, you don't think about it, you don't realize it. And I've even spoken with some people that, you know, don't depend on accessibility, and they say, you know, oh, I'm going to get involved, and, you know, I'm going to start using Orca every day. And I would touch base with these people, and they said, oh, you know what, I've really been slacking off in that area. I haven't used Orca in like 3 weeks. And, you know, I had a friend that started using Orca for 15 minutes a day, even though he could see totally fine. But after a week or two or a month of doing it, he just started, you know, slipping, and he started, not using it as much as he was, just to get used to it. And, you know, just an unfortunate thing. I don't hold anyone accountable for it, but it's just, like I said, if you don't depend on it, you just don't think about it. And that's why, you know, the foundation is starting up, is to bring awareness to the needs of these people, because a lot of people that do depend on accessibility, they just think, well, there's nothing I can do, and they just sit back and they use whatever is available, even if it doesn't work 100%. They just say, well, this is how it is, and they live with it, and they don't think it can be better. They don't think changes can be made, and that's why, again, you know, we're going to be advocates of accessibility and free open source software.
So is there anything you can do other than just making a lot of noise and just trying to get the message out there about accessibility being important?
I really think if, you know, more people that do depend on accessibility, I mean, even a few people can make a difference. All it takes is, you know, filing some bugs, following up with the developer, saying, like, you know, maybe explain to them why fixing bug XYZ is important to them and what kind of difference it can make in their life. You know, developers want people to use their software. And, you know, I've had a few occasions where I've reached out to some developers, and even they themselves have said, you know what, I've never thought of this. I'm glad you brought it to my attention, and I'm going to fix this problem. So the developers want you to use their software, and, you know, not all developers would react that way, but quite a few do. So it takes is just a few people to be, you know, slightly motivated and reach out to these developers, hop onto the mailing list, file some bugs, and I mean, that, really, that's how it, the difference can start to be made even there.
If we've got listeners who are eager to help out and join the cause, what can they do to get involved?
Definitely go to accessiblecomputingfoundation.org, and there's a contact info right there. You can get a hold of me. We're also trying to build a community, actually. If you go to accessiblefreedom.org, and we're trying to build a community of people that depend on accessibility there, we have a free voice over IP chat room that anyone can log in and use. All the information is on accessiblefreedom.org. And on Monday nights right now, we have meetings sort of where, you know, right now it's just blind individuals getting together at 8 o'clock on Monday nights, Eastern Standard Time, and we're just hanging out talking about GNU Linux, free software, what distributions we're using, why we're using them, what's accessible, what is, and, you know, when we're trying out alpha versions of newer operating systems coming out. So if anyone's interested, you can definitely go to accessiblefreedom.org also and check that out. We're trying to build a community there. We also have a web chat client for hearing impaired people if they want to use that, because, you know, obviously they're not going to use a voice over IP chat. If you want to go there, you can check out accessiblefreedom.org. You can also check out accessiblecomputingfoundation.org. At this moment, I don't have anything posted about the event, but there will be within the next week. All the information about the August 25th event will be on there. And, so you'll be able to find everything between those two websites.
Okay, brilliant. Well, we're going to have to leave it there, but thanks very much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you, guys.
And best of luck with your event.
Indeed, you have to send us an email and tell us how it went.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for all your help.
Okay. Cheers then, Jonathan.
Thanks very much.
Bye.
Bye.
And now the bit about Ubuntu or Ecosphere or whatever.
Gerald.
Yeah, that one. So recently we've had Alpha 1 of Ubuntu.
Alpha 3.
Doing well here, aren't I? Alpha 3 of the Quantel Quetzal has been released. So this is the new version of Ubuntu and the
12.10.
The 12.10, yes. The third snapshot of it that's been unleashed upon the eager world.
Will this be the last alpha before it goes to beta? Does anybody know?
I don't know. I think so. Unfortunately, get somebody like Copian.
I shall check.
So what they've done is they've updated a bunch of packages. They've upgraded the latest kernel. So a couple of things that are worth noting if you're into Ubuntu and you're into development. They're not shipping Python less than 3 by default anymore. So if you want it, you can still get it. But Python 3 is the default in 12.10. And they've made a few changes to the way that the server images are packaged.
Yes, they're not going to do an i386 CD anymore.
That's right. They're not apparently going to do an ISO image for the server for i386. If you want it, you can still get the minimal the netboot kind of image and install it off the network. But you can still, the default is going to be the 64-bit installer, which will come as an image.
And you'll be able to upgrade an i386 server that you've got kicking around.
Because that's going to be off the network, I'm assuming.
The repo's still there. It's just not burning an image.
And any server in the last 5 years is 64-bit anyway.
Or ARM.
Well, people have servers, home servers, running on old bits of clunk. Yeah.
but I'm pretty sure even a home server that's been bought new in the last 5 years will be capable of running 64-bit.
Well, it depends on, I mean, if it's an old netbook or something like that.
Why are you running
something with
server?
A broken screen? Yeah,
why not?
But those lucky people will be able to get a net install.
Or they could just get Debian. Oh, no, sorry. Ubuntu. That's what we're here for. I remember now.
That's right. Cool. Okay. Anything else in Alpha 3 that's worthy of note?
Well, there's new LibreOffice with a nice new green splash screen.
Wow. Sign me up.
Yeah. And they've upgraded. They've upgraded. It's as you'd expect from an interim release, an alpha. They've upgraded things like X to and GNOME components to the newest versions to make sure that they can give them a good testing before they go live in 12.10.
Cool. Okay. So people can download the ISO and try it out and file bugs, feedback stuff.
Hope nothing breaks.
I'm using it on a daily basis now.
Okay. Are you using it now?
I'm using it now, yeah.
Okay.
It works fine.
We can still hear you.
Also in the bit, web apps launched, as we mentioned earlier.
Yeah. We talked about the OSCON announcement of the web apps, which aren't just shortcuts to websites. They actually integrate with the OS.
Yes.
Very exciting.
Very nice. Yes.
And we also heard that Didier Roche has put out a call for help with Quickly, who wants to reboot the project.
So Quickly is a sort of... I'm hesitant to say Ruby on Rails for the desktop, but basically a framework for quickly building applications which can be easily packaged.
The clue's in the name, really, isn't it?
Oh, Quickly, yes.
And Michael Hall has been doing some pretty awesome stuff around Quickly and building a GTK Ubuntu front end for Quickly, and he's built it in Quickly.
Sounds self-hosting.
It is self-hosting. It's very cool, actually. It tells you, it automatically detects what project you're on. If you could just go to the Launchpad website and go to a web page about your project, it'll switch that to your default project. And then if you want to run it, it just knows what project you're thinking about. It's very cool.
Okay. So why does it need rebooting?
I guess it's gone a bit stale. I don't really know. I've not.
Hold a minute.
Used
this
it.
This was just to remind me. This was Tony's news item, right?
Well, I'm happy to be able to say that one of the reasons to do it is to port it to Python 3.
Ah, very good.
Which obviously is a requirement, given that they've taken Python 2 out of Ubuntu.
Right.
So
they haven't taken it out. It's just not going to be default.
Yeah, exactly. So therefore, it would not be sensible to ship it.
Want to reduce dependencies on Python
3. Yeah, exactly. And you know, it was one of these projects that evolved rather than was designed from scratch. So I imagine there's a lot of kludges and old code they want to refactor and get rid of.
There is bacon code in there.
Start with that. Start with that.
I think this is one of the things that one of the many projects that emerged out of Jono being on a long plane ride.
Yeah.
Plane trip.
Yeah. So you're saying that Jono hacked some code together, threw it over the wall and relied on other people? No, I didn't say that.
He'd never do that.
No.
Couldn't possibly comment.
So George Castro, one of the community leads around Ubuntu, has blogged to say that the Ubuntu forums needs some single sign-on help again. So what happened here was that the Ubuntu forums apparently are based on a PHP application called vBulletin. Mm-hmm. And in order to make it work with the OpenID stuff that, or single sign-on stuff that the rest of Ubuntu works with, they needed to do some hacking. And apparently the previous version was kind of based on vBulletin 3, and it was kind of hacked together, and they're looking for someone to help them get it working on vBulletin version 4, and they've open sourced the code and you can get it on Launchpad.
Cool.
And not about Ubuntu.
Yes.
The maintainer of several GNOME-based projects whose name escapes me.
Oh, I had it a moment ago. It's Benjamin Ott.
Has written a blog post asking if GNOME has lost its way.
And has it?
That's for you to decide.
Well,
part of the commentary that he made is that GNOME is now basically a Red Hat project, which is something I've heard from a number of people, most of those people who are working at Canonical.
Do they mean the GNOME desktop? Or do they mean GNOME all?
I mean GNOME the project, and the direction and governance of the project is done at the water cooler inside of Red Hat Towers.
Because a lot of the GNOME components are used, or you know, the libraries and so on are obviously used heavily in Unity, the desktop,
and a lot of the applications that aren't the desktop environment,
right?
So GCalc, like and all that sort of stuff. Yes.
Which of course brings us neatly onto another discussion, which is that Unity is apparently now going to be available as an optional desktop on Fedora. So there's an interesting set of things happening here. And you kind of, to me, that whole discussion about GNOME as a project losing its way is not necessarily valid if you look at it as something that the library is being used more widely. So, but I understand the general view, oh gosh, maybe this is in control of one organization at this point.
Yes, it seems slightly hypocritical to criticise Red Hat if they are essentially governing the direction of GNOME in the same way that contributing to it in the same way that Canonical contributes to Ubuntu and largely govern its direction.
But then Canonical did start Ubuntu and Unity, whereas
yes,
Red Hat sort of just
make a lot of money out
but
of.
But it's the same as anything. If there are people interested and want to get involved, then they can have a say in the governance and what happens. If nobody cares and Red Hat are the only people there, you know, paying any attention to it, then
put up or shut up.
Exactly, yeah. There we go. And on that note from John Major, that's the end of the Not About and Bit About Ubuntu this time. It's time for your feedback, and we've had a lot of lovely emails since the last episode, and we start with this one from Marcel Leroux.
For those of your listeners who would like to try Ubuntu again, but without Unity, please read my new post, Ubuntu 12.04, The Way Most of Us Want It. And there's a link to a Reddit article. And Popey's left us a note here saying, note how it has no upvotes on Reddit yet, but claims that most of us want it this way. And you are, dear listeners, can fix that. So click and upvote it to prove Popey wrong.
If indeed that is the way most of us want it.
Yes. Worth saying there's the freedom and flexibility to be able to change it at the top. Yeah, indeed. Maybe not quite as many people want or that fussed about it as some people might think, though. Mm.
Dean from Australia wrote to say,
I just listened to the most recent podcast and your roundtable had a discussion regarding Steam Client for Linux. Anyway, Richard Stallman has recently voiced his opinions on it. I find Stallman's response a little hypocritical. First and foremost, isn't freedom about choice? People can complain about the non-free element of Steam, but realistically, it's up to the user if they want to install it or not. If they don't like it, don't install it. The thing about Richard Stallman is that when he uses the word freedom, he talks about not freedom as in having the choice to do what you want. He thinks about freedom as in not being oppressed, as he sees it, which a lot of people... Yeah, miss and
free as in speech, not free as in beer.
Yeah, no, that's
or free that as is, in that's a different or kind of free as in a choice of beers.
Free as in oh dear, this is getting too confusing.
So I think that the point that Dean from Australia makes, saying that first and foremost isn't freedom about choice. Well, Stallman would disagree with you, and he is a bit of a character, shall we say. But he's extremely consistent in his views.
Yes.
So he tends not to be hypocritical. He doesn't contradict himself, but he's a nutter.
Well, and as we mentioned earlier, he does actually acknowledge that it might be useful to get people to move to Linux using proprietary games as the bridgehead to get them across. So that in some ways is a slight softening of some of his previous position. So interesting to see. Yeah.
And talking of contradictions.
On the same subject, David Carson emailed.
While I could see both sides of the argument, I think that Alan nailed it when he pointed out that nobody is forcing anyone to install proprietary software on their systems. We can choose to install it or choose to stay open source. Also, I think that Tony contradicted himself when he said that we shouldn't allow makers of proprietary software to dictate how we do things in open source. He then stated that Linux does not have an office suite comparable or compatible with Microsoft's offering. I didn't think that the aim of open source software developers was to mimic the functionality of proprietary applications, but to innovate and forge a different path. If they are doing that, then surely makers of proprietary software are already dictating how we do things.
Can I just point out, actually, on the back of that comment, that one of the things that Mark Shuttleworth talked about at OSCON was exactly that he and the Ubuntu project and the team at Canonical really feel strongly that they want to not be copying OS X and Windows, but really to leapfrog all of these other guys. So that's a really good point. However, you know, my own opinion is, unless you have those basic things that people expect from an operating system, or let's just say a computing device, because people don't think about operating systems, they just think about this device. Does it let me send my email? Does it let me access my web apps? Unless those things like office suites are there, then and they don't have to be absolutely the same, but they are broadly consistent or understandable, then you don't get that buy-in. So
I think it's a bit disingenuous at this stage to say that there is no office suite.
I think the point I made was about compatibility with some of the more advanced features, and that was really the split that I was saying. It's not that we should absolutely ape a copy of Office 2003 or 2007 or whatever within Linux. We should have the innovation and the different paths being forged that the correspondent talks about in this email, but we need to have the compatibility to work with other people who are using that software. Otherwise, it does shut out swathes of, you know, business users or whatever.
Well, you know, it denies them their choice as well, actually. If you're saying you have to use the same suite as me because I'm open source and mine's not compatible with yours, so you should all come over to my side, it's actually denying them their choice as well. So
absolutely. Do what you like with the UI. Just make sure you can open and save the files.
Cree Trapper left us a message on the website saying,
I enjoy your show very much, especially all the little quips and asides.
Thank you.
I never had as much fun with voucher codes as in the most recent episode of UUPC. Keep up the great work. You see, guys, I said we should have done the voucher codes.
We are known for our fun with voucher codes.
Yes. That's what they put on iTunes reviews. Stefan Haslinger has sent us this missive.
It's always good fun to listen to your show. I think a podcast is a success if, as a listener, you have got the feeling you're sitting in the room next to the presenters having a good time.
Where is he? Hold on. I'm looking around the room.
Is he having a good time or the presenters having a
it's
good
the
time?
Hat.
And this is always the case with your podcast. It could be a bit more in-depth, but presumably I'm not the average Ubuntu user. I wonder if we've ever met an average Ubuntu user.
There's no such thing, I'm sure.
Thank you very much for that, Stefan.
In the last show, you were searching for a fill-in for missing presenters. Ooh, that would be me. I'm not sure that my English is good enough for such a task, but I think it would be okay for some chatting about software development on Ubuntu, if you like. Unfortunately, I cannot come over to neither Studio A or B because I'm located in Vienna, Austria.
Well, Stefan, thank you very much indeed for your offer. It's clearly you're not trying hard enough to get to the studios. Fortunately, we're able to, I was going to say scrape the barrel and get two guest presenters, but two excellent guest presenters were available who did actually live a little bit more locally. But thank you very much indeed for your
offer. Unfortunately, they couldn't come either, so they got us.
Yeah. yes. And but yes, so thank you, Stefan. And that's the end of your feedback.
And that's all for this episode. Thank you very much for listening. You can find out how to get in touch with us on our website, which is podcast.ubuntu-uk.org, including voicemail numbers and Twitter feeds, Facebook and IRC channels. I think we might even be on Google+. Let us know what you think of the show or give us your thoughts about Ubuntu and the community around it. And join us on Tuesday the 14th of August for our next live episode. And I may be here if I can persuade Alan or Laura not to be.
Yes, well, if the Mount Yiffikifikifikifikal volcano goes off and Laura gets stuck in America, then, you know, we might be calling on you again. But yeah, so this will be the last episode before Og Camp, won't it? The next episode.
Well, that one will be, yes.
Yeah, and then the one after that will be the live episode from Og Camp. So we get a few
weeks
off.
They always go well.
Yes, we've got something very special planned for that.
Oh, dear. Oh, there's a trailer.
Well, thank you very much indeed to Alan, and thank you to Andy for coming along and helping out. We do appreciate it. And we'll hope to speak to you again soon.
Thank you very much.
Cheers then. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.